Play hard, pray hard is not guided by rarity of the material. A durable, listenable song sequence seems to be the first priority, and you can't do better than starting with a sturdy, unfamiliar version of John Henry. Nathan Salzberg has done an exemplary job of organizing these tunes from a vanished world which few folks can remember today. The Work Hard disc includes songs about labor and commerce. Play Hard gathers a selection on leisure and partying. Pray Hard finishes the set with songs about Christian life and the afterlife. There's other amusing bygone quirks in the collection. A number of spoken skits are done as introductions, ideal for an audience used to listening to music on radio programs with a vaudeville format. And why so many fiddles making sounds like mules and trains and hounds? Well, listening to such stuff in your home was the high-tech special effect of the early 20th century. The one dog, so to speak, on the anthology is Whit Graydon's Tennessee Coon Hunt, a mad mosaic of yelping and yapping fiddle, growling and hollering vocals that sure is striking, but not worth experiencing more than two or three times. With other performers, such as Warren Kaplinger's Cumberland Mountain Entertainers, the non-music parts are at least as spirited as the playing that follows.
Hello, boys. How are you feeling this evening?
Fine, fine.
Say, we're going to have a dance here tonight now, and the folks are coming down out of the holler. I'd like to have you boys clean up this barn. Let's get ready for this thing.
We'll get right after you.
Get that old cow back out of the way, and take the calf along with her, too, will you?
Hey,
Warren, you get the hay shoveled out of the way back there.
All right.
All right.
George, put that corn and oats over in one corner.
All right.
This calf don't want to go, Andy.
Take the calf out along with her. Take the calf out along. Now, this looks all right. This looks pretty clean around here. Hey, George, how's your fiddle? In tune? Oh, that's fine. How's your banjo, Willie? That's good, that's good. How's your guitar, Albert? Oh, that's splendid. Now let's play that old piece, Old MacDonald Had a Farm. Let it go.
Great.
That's great, boys. That's the stuff.
Old MacDonald had a farm. Hee-ha, hee-ha-ho. On that farm he had some chicks. Hee-ha, hee-ha-ho. Chick, chick, and a chick, chick, that. Yeah, chick, that, chick, everywhere.
There's a lot of variety on Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard, even a complaint about the rise of chain stores. But the currents of long-ago lives come through. The drudgery of the work that demanded the release of the party, which then required the penance of prayer. The spare, rural nature of the religious songs on the third disc is particularly striking. Almost better when they sound distant, unknowable, mysterious. John Jeremiah Sullivan puts it best in his liner notes to Disc 3, writing about the obscure Beyond the Starry Plain by the Redbush Singers. I understand hardly any of the words. From the abyss of the static come Dear Mother, and No Matter What I Do, and We Shall Meet Again, and Jesus Is My God. I listen to this song and imagine Don Wall listening to it, leaning forward to hear it better, an infinitesimal point of communion. There's a starry plain of such communion all over this collection, waiting to be heard anew after so many years.
Someday you'll meet dear mother beyond the starry plain, where she will be a friend, and he'll be
Milo Miles reviewed Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard on the Tompkins Square label. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at NPR Fresh Air and on Tumblr at nprfreshair.tumblr.com. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer today is Fred Snyder. Dorothy Ferriby is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Nell Beschenstein. Sue Spolin directed today's show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University at cysimsfoundation.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.
This is the end, my only friend, the end.
Well, humanity's had a pretty good run, but that's all over now, thanks to the Mayans. Yes, it's the end of the world on the 21st, as the Mayan calendar has foreseen. So let's go out on top with an end-of-the-world party at Rockwell. KXLL presents the Mayan End-of-the-World Party this Friday, starting at 9 p.m., with three great live bands, the B-Team All-Stars, Disco Punch, and Tiger Pilot. It's a 21-and-over event, $5 at the door, a full bar, and it all happens at Rockwell. It's Apocalypse Friday, and it's the end.
This is the end, my only friend, the end of our
programming. Support comes from Pie in the Sky, now taking orders for holiday pies, pastries, and desserts, including fruit and nut stolen, plum pudding, bûche de Noël, and gluten-free desserts. Pie in the Sky, located on Seward Street or at 523-9135.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you, your host for today. And in the forecast, it's all about the winds coming in. Mostly cloudy skies, but locally very windy with 50-mile-an-hour gusts near downtown Juneau and Douglas and out in the out of interior passes. The highs are going to be right around 19 degrees and might get up into the 20s near downtown. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies, again, locally windy with isolated snow showers late. Lows around 15 degrees, except around 4 degrees in wind-sheltered areas. Once again, the wind gusts 35 miles an hour up to 45 miles an hour here downtown. And those winds are going to continue to through tomorrow. 45-mile-an-hour winds predicted for tomorrow and Thursday night. And wind gusts at 40 miles an hour still predicted for Friday as partly cloudy and mostly clear skies break and lows 10 degrees for Friday night. So cold and windy and blowing, and but getting clearer skies. And that's in the forecast in the show today here for Juno Afternoon. We're going to be talking to folks. We got the whole Brown family here, as well as Grady Saunders, who's going to be talking about the coffee fundraiser for Kenya for healthcare scholarships to Kenya. Really fascinating program. We'll be talking to those folks about that coming up in just a moment after National Native News. Also, author Jim Lavrakis, who's a photographer and an author, has a brand new book called Snap Decisions. We'll be talking to him, calling him as he is in Homer, Alaska, and we'll be talking to him in just a moment. Also, talking to folks tonight from Northern Light Church, Lindsay Cato, from NAMI, and also Dove Gartenberg from NAMI. They've organized a community night of hope and healing tonight at 6 p.m. at Northern Light Church. And we'll be speaking to them about many of the events that have been happening lately, both in town and nationally, that have spurred that event on. Also, it's the Eagle Crest Report Day, so we'll be discussing what's happening at Eagle Crest, holiday plans for Eagle Crest, different hours at Eagle Crest, all that stuff that is coming up towards the end of the hour. hour today. First, we've got National Native News, and that's first, and then we'll be talking to, once again, the Brown family with Grady Saunders from Heritage Coffee.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native Americans lost an advocate in Congress this week with the death of Hawaii Senator Daniel Inouye. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
Leaders across Indian country are mourning the loss of Senator Inouye. He's remembered as a fierce advocate, fighting for health care improvements while also trying to spur job growth in Indian country through education and other economic initiatives. The National Congress of American Indians put out a statement saying its members will always remember him for holding the line on numerous issues critical to cultural protection and tribal sovereignty. Wyoming Senator John Barrasso is the top Republican on the Indian Affairs Committee, where Inouye served in different capacities, including as its chair. Barrasso says the death of Senator Inouye, coupled with the retirement of Hawaii's other senator, Daniel Akaka, is a massive blow to Indian country.
In terms of the Indian Affairs Committee, I work both with Senator Inouye and Senator Akaka, two real leaders in the issues of, and to have one retiring and the other has passed on. I mean, it is a big blow to those of us who worked so hard on those issues.
Inouye was 88 and served 9 terms in the Senate. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The U.S. Interior Department announced Tuesday the initial framework for the land buyback program to purchase allotments from willing individuals and turn them over to tribes. The 10-year, $1.9 billion program is part of the Cobell Indian Trust settlement, finalized last month. According to the Interior Department, fractionated land stems from an 1887 law allotting parcels of tribal land to individuals. Over time, the number of shared interests and single parcels have grown, with highly fractionated tracts unused. Federal officials say freeing them up can help stimulate tribal economic development. 3 consultations on the plan will be held early next year. A multi-state agriculture organization is starting up a mobile service. It will bring fresh food to reservations across the upper Midwest. Steve Rysom reports.
The vehicle will be part farmer's market and part grocery store. The project, sponsored by the Intertribal Agricultural Council, will begin by serving a handful of reservations in northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota in May. Along with supplying fresh nutritional food, project leader Dan Cornelius says the store on wheels will give gardeners a chance to make extra money by selling their produce on several reservations.
I think that it's got a lot of potential to, in terms of creating an intertribal food distribution network across the region, trying to build more collaboration, more partnerships. I think in that sense it's got a lot of potential, and I think it'll be exciting to see how it develops over time.
The project has at least one supporter in Ho-Chunk Nation President John Greendeer. The tribe has land in several counties in Wisconsin instead of one centralized area. Greendeer says he likes the idea of a mobile store. He says reservations need easier access to fresh fruits and vegetables.
You're looking at, in upwards of 17% of Native people that have diabetes. When you look at other different individual tribal communities, that number goes up to over a quarter, over 25%.
Dan Cornelius says he hopes the food distribution network will eventually serve all 34 federally recognized Native American tribes in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and in Michigan. I'm Steve Rysom.
During this month in 2000, legislation was signed into law to authorize the president to award congressional medals to the original 29 Navajo code talkers for their efforts in World War II. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Support for National Native News comes from Donlin Gold, working to develop responsible mining in Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim region. Donlin Gold wishes everyone a safe and healthy holiday season.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. That's music right there from Kenya. And the connection between coffee, healthcare, and Kenya is a connection that two-thirds of the Brown family and Grady Saunders can talk to us about right now. Carolyn Brown, Ben Brown in the studio with me, as well as Grady Saunders from Heritage Coffee. Thanks, everyone, for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
We appreciate it. And hello to George at home recording this. That's what Carolyn said. So let's talk about this. There's this really interesting program you guys have put together that's part of a cooperative partnership that maybe at first you'd think, what does all that have to do with each other? But tell me, Ben, I'll turn to you first, maybe a little bit of history about the project.
Well, it started before I was born, when my parents moved to Alaska after they got out of medical school. And later on, they established a nonprofit corporation in Palmer, which was their medical practice. And that nonprofit corporation has continued to exist, even though they're no longer in private practice in Palmer. It gave scholarships out to students at my alma mater, Palmer High School and Wasilla High School, for a number of years. And then a few years ago, my parents called me up and said, we're going to Kenya for 2 years. We're going to go volunteer. Can you house sit? And I thought it was kind of crazy, but they weren't making
it up. This isn't something my parents would call and tell me.
No, I wasn't that surprised. The funny thing was, I didn't want to house sit. I didn't want to leave downtown and move to Douglas. But that's another story. I bit the bullet. I house sat for them over in Douglas, and they spent almost 2 years over there volunteering in a very rural, not very well-off part of the country up on the shores of Lake Victoria, where there were a lot of people with HIV and a lot of real serious acute and chronic health care needs. And I would hear from them from time to time, and they would call, and they would send letters, and I would get pictures. I never got to go visit, but I knew that they were doing great work over there. And after they came back, they wanted to continue doing that and try to help the people there meet their own needs for medical services and medical professional ability. And so the scholarship program now doesn't send money to students in the Matsu Valley. It's helping young people in Kenya who want to become physician's assistants and nurses and learn the skills that can help the people of Matoso, the town there, and the region around it live healthier, better lives. And so my parents asked me to be on the board of Women and Children's Health Associates, which is the nonprofit corporation, and I have been doing that for a while now. And that is kind of why we're here today, but because scholarships require money. And we are looking for ways to make sure that the resources are there to continue granting the scholarships out.
What kind of money typically does it take to kind of make an impact with this program?
Well, it's really quite fascinating. When we got there in 2004, we went there to take care of HIV/AIDS patients. It became extremely obvious that there were just an enormous number of very, very bright students who could get through high school, but they didn't know what else they wanted to do. So we thought, let's take some of this money that we had been putting for years and years and years into kids in the Matsu Valley in Alaska and see if we can help those kids get to school. So we set up a scholarship committee there, which is all Kenyans there. They choose the students. We help them choose the criteria. The criteria we set is if a kid gets through high school, decides she or he wants to do something in health, that can be a medical doctor, the equivalent of a PA or CO, a nurse, laboratory, pharmacist, social worker, and more recently we've now come into the world of electronic medical records because that is beginning to be a reality there. So if kids choose that, if they can get into a school, we don't do that for them. They must do their own thing. If they, quote, matriculate, if they are accepted by the committee, and there's about a, for every one kid that's chosen, there are six who apply, so it's pretty high on the totem pole, then that kid, once we know that kid gets into that school, wherever it may be, then our scholarship program will underwrite that kid for the duration of their time in school. Since we started, we
You will actually fully underwrite their entire...
Yes.
Wow, that's an
incredible
opportunity.
Think about it, though. It takes like $500 a year to put a kid through school, including room and board, books, and all of the things that it takes. Now, they may go to school 2 years, or they may go to school 3 years, depending on the complexity of it. That's not a lot of money. Since we started in 2004, we've had 24 kids 28 kids into the program now. We've had no failures. Those kids have matriculated in pharmacy, medicine, nursing, all of the things that we talked about before.
It's really got to be incredibly exciting.
Oh, it is.
Right? I mean, you know, to do just, a program
really
like
is.
This.
It really is. So when we came back, we thought, when we started this, we had a tiny little baby endowment out of the proceeds of when we sold the practice in the Mat-Su Valley. So we put that in some mutuals and some other stuff, and we just sort of did this off of the interest and the dividends of it. And then we thought, well, maybe we can do something a little bit more to get a little bit more into the endowment, because we won't eat into the principal. We will only fund enough kids. People keep asking us, we want you to fund 10 kids a year. Right now we can only do 4 kids a year, and that's really working very well. Of course, we would like to do more, but we won't eat into that principle until we can build that principle up. So, yes, it's working. We've had no failures, and it's really a wonderful success.
That's incredible. So, Grady, talk to me about how you got involved with this. I mean, I know that Heritage Coffee, people have had the delicious Kenyan coffees that you guys have had, as well as a lot of other of the coffee that you've worked in. So I know there's a connection there where you are aware of Kenya, probably have traveled there in your coffee business. But talk to me about how you then got involved in this program.
Yeah, well, I've been to Kenya 3 times, so I understand a little bit of the problems that they have there. And I was at dinner one night with the Browns, and we just all started to talk about where we'd been in the world and various things, and they mentioned what they'd been doing. And I said, you know, we buy coffee from that area, which is kind of interesting. And they said, maybe we can get together and do something that'll benefit on both ends.
Did you know that was a major an economic factor there?
Yes,
in the area?
Yes, I visited some of the coffee areas there. Yes, absolutely.
So it's a traditional kind of longstanding business there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so,
next door in Ethiopia is where coffee came from originally.
Right.
So Kenya's been growing coffee for years, and it really is the cash crop for the whole country. But that particular area, what was interesting is we are now importing coffee from that district where they're doing their work. So that was another kind of tie-in. But Kenya is one of the greatest coffees in the world, so it's nice. And what we thought about doing, since it's very inexpensive, we came up with a percentage. We do 7% of every pound of Kenyan that we sell gets donated back to the scholarship, and we're hoping that we can generate enough to do a few scholarships.
So
each year.
Yeah, so actually add on to that 4 a year and maybe
Absolutely.
Kind of
and
get
maybe
that
take
growing.
On some more students.
Yeah, that would be great.
It works from both ends for us too. We go and Kenya because we buy the coffee from there. So they're making a living growing coffee. We buy the coffee, we bring it back, we sell the coffee, and now it goes back and helps support those districts again too and people in Kenya.
Yeah, it's a kind of an amazing multiplier factor where you're not only supporting the economy through the first buy, but then you're sending back way that really improves the quality of life
for
people there.
And that's a real important thing for us in the coffee business. We really like to do things that help develop that part of the world. It really needs it, and it's a good way to ensure that we continue to get a good product.
Yeah. Is there a way people just maybe listening to this could help be part of this as well, Ben?
Well, the coffee is for sale at Heritage Coffee's retail locations.
All our retail locations. Not in the grocery stores because there's a partnership thing with grocery stores. It becomes too complicated.
But it makes great gifts. And so certainly they could probably contact either of my parents, and my dad would probably deliver bags of coffee to them, knowing my dad. He's famous for house calls when a kid is sick. I don't see why he wouldn't drop off some coffee, too. It's very delicious.
I'm really
coffee.
Drowsy, George. I need this.
Well, I have to say, as an aside, I have visions of students pulling all-nighters in pharmacy school in Kenya, drinking Kenyan coffee, yet one more sort of cyclical element to the story. But yes, by all means, every bag of coffee sold, 7% of the proceeds, as Grady said, are going to go towards the scholarship fund, and that over the long term is going to help build capacity. So we just want to get the word out there. If you're thinking of something good that you want to give for a gift this Christmas, buy a pound or two or 12-ounce bag, excuse me, but some bags of Kenyan coffee, and you're both doing good and you're giving someone some delicious coffee that will help meet their caffeine needs.
Well, let's talk about the coffee just for a minute. What makes Kenyan coffee so unique and good?
It has incredible flavor combined with, well, its balance is what's so wonderful about it. It has great acidity, which is a good thing in coffee, has good body, and it's really spicy. So it's spicy in a good way, which means it's got tongue feel and mouth feel. And it's one of my favorite coffees. I drink it probably more often than any other coffee, although I switch around and drink just about everything. But it's a great coffee. It's grown at such high elevations. Most of the area in Kenya is over 4,000 to 5,000 feet. So it's a very dense bean. So it's a good roasting coffee that can take a dark roast. It can take a light roast. It's really flavorful.
And I just also we'll talk a little bit more about the scholarship specifically, but I just want to kind of give a nod to Heritage and the efforts that you take to make sure that you're buying coffee that's grown in a responsible way and grown in a humane way. And tell me a little bit about that kind of program as well.
Well, we try as many ways as we can. First comes quality, of course, but secondly comes sustainability. And sustainability for us is different than fair trade. It's an expanded idea of fair trade. It means that not only does the money that we pay extra going to back to where the coffee came from has to go to something in the community as well, not just into a farmer's pocket. So we hope and look and travel to and visit farms that do things like medical clinics and various things on the farms for a lot of times for the transient people that come through to pick, because they move all over the country to pick because coffee ripens at different times in different areas. There's so many microclimates. So some of the farms we work with have medical clinics, some have dental clinics, some have schools for the kids, some have different variations of stuff, and we always look for things like that. We'll participate in getting computers for schools or various things.
So participating in this just makes sense for you guys as far as your business model.
Develop a model that we can do this community to community, too. So we're looking for ways that we can connect Juneau to another community somewhere else to try to do something together. We did a project a few years ago at the elementary school, and we were going to try to connect two elementary schools between two countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about kind of the future of this whole thing. Either Ben or Carolyn could tell me about.
Well, we hope to keep having students apply. We would like to have more than 4 students per year. That depends on how much is in our little endowment fund. And people have really been very nice. We've had some very nice gifts, just personal gifts from different people, all of which goes into the endowment, and then we work off of the endowment, and we hope to keep expanding this as we go on.
Yeah, well, it's a fantastic program. Ben, you have any?
Well, I was just going to add, you know, my parents asked me to be on the board because they didn't think I was doing enough. No, I think
you're not busy.
As a generational thing, and I'm really happy to do it. So I've only been to Africa once. I went with my dad to South Africa when he had a child abuse prevention congress 11 years ago. But it's possible to do this remotely to a certain extent, but I think sometime next year or 2014 at the latest, my father and I are going to go back over there. And that'll be all of our own expense, of course. That won't come out of any of the funds that are going for scholarships. And I'm really looking forward to being there on the ground, seeing where the coffee's grown, meeting some of the folks my parents have told me about. You know, we have pictures of the scholarship committee, and I've read their biographies, but it's really interesting to me to kind of get a little bit closer, and I think that's going to provide some of the opportunities that Grady was mentioning in terms of being able to link this community with Matoso over in Kenya.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing to think about. Here we are in Juneau, Alaska, and we're having you have organized this way for people here to have a direct effect in helping this community and these people across the many oceans from here, and really make a difference.
But listeners can do it very easily just by
buying
a bag of coffee.
Absolutely.
When you do travel to Kenya, I'd love to try to get you connected to the people that we buy the coffee from as well at the same time.
Absolutely. I would be a wasted opportunity. I'd have to go back to Kenya again, which is expensive and time consuming. So we'll try to batch trips as we like to do and make it as productive as a possible trip when I go with my dad. And my mom's going to let me and my dad go on our own, I think, and not
You're
come
old
with
enough.
Us.
Nice.
They
can do that.
Maybe bring the golf club. I mean, I'm sure there's a golf course there somewhere.
You betcha.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, once again, it's the healthcare scholarships, and this is the Alaska to Kenya collaborative partnership, and thanks so much for all of you coming in and telling us about it. And everyone out there listening, buy that Kenyan coffee from Heritage, and you'll be contributing to this great effort.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Kere na kai na kero ko ne koma kumere na.
Start to sing. Hot stone, pretty hot boy. Put up your hand and you scream.
Music from Kenya there, here on Juno Afternoon. And next on the line with me, from all the way from Homer, Alaska, the end of the road, is Jim Lavrakis. Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
I thank you.
And Jim, you've got a really interesting and wonderful to read, and I would mention a great gift for Christmas, new book out called Snap Decisions, and it's really wrapping up your whole career of the past 30 years as an Alaska news photographer. It's a fascinating book.
It wraps up my career, and I think it wraps up quite a bit of history of Alaska and the things that took place in Anchorage and around the state that I got to witness.
It also shows the wonderful development of your mustache through the years. I really appreciate seeing that. You've got some great facial hair there, Jim.
Well, the facial hair is gone. The top of the head is a little bit different these days.
I see. Well, tell me, I mean, the thing that's fascinating about this book is that it just runs the gamut from absolutely frontline news, what people would say is hard news, from shootouts and accidents in the kind of Anchorage area, to some of the most beautiful scenic photography that you can imagine. There's beautiful stuff from around the state of Alaska. Tell me about what it is that kind of has made you tick as your career has gone through. What is it that was the thing that you wanted to do in different times in your career?
Well, I think as I developed my news sense, I understood that, you know, it's really the people of Alaska who make Alaska. We live in a gorgeous place, a wonderful place to live, and so, you know, I think what you see in the photographs is even if there's a wilderness shot or there's, you know, a pretty sunset or something like that, there's people in my photographs, and it places them, you know, in these wonderful settings, and also give scale to the size of the state and the size of the scene.
You know, you were talking about some of the history. I just want to maybe just kind of run a few things by you that I came to the state in 91, so I haven't been here nearly as long as you. And so I was not aware of the what's referred to as the strip club bomb blast. Tell me a little bit about that story and what was happening there.
Well, that was my third month on the job at the Daily News, and when the night was over, I turned to the managing editor and said, "Is this what it's going to be like for the rest of my career?" And he assured me it wasn't, he was right about that. But it was, you know, the Great Alaska Bush Company in Anchorage used to be on 4th Avenue, and I just had I heard a scanner call, police scanner dispatch a possible bomb in the street outside that strip club, and you know, I showed up not thinking that there was going to be much happening. It was pretty nondescript, you know, a paper bag in the middle of the street.
Yeah, because so often those things seem to be false alarms, and you know.
And this sure did, but the bomb did go off, and you know, it spun me backwards. I was within 60, 70 feet of it, and you know, it was just a horrible, terrifying thing to see the police officer enveloped in a fireball, and you know, I could hear him screaming. But I did my job,
So what? You know, I mean, just to recap a little bit, what happened was a police officer arrived on the scene with a bomb disposal container, but mm-hmm. as he was trying to put it in that disposal container, the bomb did go off.
It did.
Right.
And, yeah. And he lived through it, but, you know, he retired shortly after that, and I was on my way as a newspaper photographer
yeah.
after that whole incident.
So I think, so a lot of that, you know, a lot of the career of a photographer, especially in the Anchorage area, is going to be that kind of crime and accident kind of coverage. Is that something that wears on you after a while?
Well, you know, that is something that is definitely the main part of the job. I mean, we report news, and some photographers like doing it more than others. I kind of thrived on that that whole aspect, you know, that beat part of the job. And I think that, you know, I just had a good way of dealing with it, and that was to not hold things inside, and to talk to my boss and my wife, you know, and friends to get this out.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there were times when it was hard, and that was certainly one of those incidents where I leaned up against a wall of a building and, you know, had a good cry.
Yeah. Tell me, let's skip forward for a little bit. Tell me about the coverage of the earthquake that happened. And this was the one that kind of happened sort of interior Alaska, the 7.9 earthquake. You have some
yeah.
really dramatic shots of that.
Well, you know, whenever you think of earthquake photographs, you think of buildings falling. And this was in the middle of really the middle of nowhere. There was some visual things to see up near in the Tok area, and you know, the highway out of Alaska was split in two, and I crawled into the crack in the roadway and made some pictures of cars making their way down the road, and in the little village of Mentasta Lake, there was it's kind of subtle but very interesting effects there. A tree split lengthwise up its trunk, and you know, the kind of a quiet picture, I guess you would say, but it certainly showed the power of the earthquake.
Yeah, it's a sort of chilling to me, and also, of course, the road splitting is very dramatic, and to see the, you know, power of the earth underneath our feet is kind of incredible. So that's all in a portion of the book that's kind of more about your news coverage, and then you have a portion of the book called Features. Maybe if you could, are there a few of those that you think of as ones that kind of stand out in your mind?
Oh, yes. You know, we talked about the grandeur of Alaska and scenics and that kind of thing. There's a shot, a black and white photograph that spreads across two pages of Turnagain Arm, and that couple on Valentine's Day looking out at the arm with the tide out. That's a gorgeous shot. There's a picture of a moose. I mean, Anchorage was moose crazy, and probably always will be. And so we were encouraged to gather any kind of good photographs of moose, and there's a picture there of a young moose leaning in and checking out a fawn figurine on the outside of a resident's home in South Anchorage.
I was hoping you'd bring that one up because I love that one. The little
the plastic
deer on the lawn and the
yeah,
moose kind of checking it out.
The little Bambi, yeah.
Right.
And then the other one I like, Andy, is the one I called Refracted Flag, and that's a picture of shot through a windshield with a bunch of raindrops on it, and I focused on the raindrops, and they are refracting. The raindrops act as a lens and refract the image of a flag, a U.S. flag in the background, and each one of the raindrops has an individual flag in it.
It is a beautiful shot. I love that one as well. There's two other that caught my eye that I just wanted to mention. One is titled "A People in Peril," and that's something that looks like this was something that was taken in fall of 1988, but it's something that could have been taken just this past fall as well. It seems to be a continual issue here, folks on the street.
Yes, a homeless person passed out on the Anchorage Delaney Park strip there, and in a fetal position and getting covered up by snow. That was part of the People in Peril series that won us the a Pulitzer Prize at the Daily News. It was a team Pulitzer, and several of my photographs were in that package that we produced. But this was one of those situations where do I take pictures or do I help? And initially I tried to wake him. I tried to wake this man, and I couldn't rouse him. So I called paramedics, and on their way, I took two or three pictures of him laying there.
Yeah, so kind of came up with a compromise to fulfill what you do as a journalist, but also fulfill what you do as a human being.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other one that really caught my eye, that is a dramatic photo, and that you speak about briefly by saying that you kind of marvel at the events you were allowed to witness in a person's life, is one titled "Living and Dying," in which clearly a man is on his deathbed.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's just what it is. And I was invited, just me, the photographer. The man's wife did not want a reporter to come. She just wanted a picture that would honor her husband for his service in the Marines. And that day, the local detachment of Marines showed up, and they were there to show their respects. And I photographed that scene. And it was one of those situations where there was so much emotion in the room that the camera kind of became a shield. I kept that camera up in front of my face, and it held back tears, and it held back, it shielded me from all of the emotion that was in that room, and I think I came away with a very telling photograph of that scene.
It's a beautiful shot of a obviously very emotional scene. This is from Far North Press. It's called Snap Decisions. Jim Lavrakis is the photographer. And Jim, I wanted to mention one last thing, which was that you, on the last page of this, acknowledged that this part of how this happened was through a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, and that was a godsend, Andy. It paid for about two-thirds of the production of this book, and it was a fun way to fundraise. It really was.
Yeah, and I think that then the people who do contribute really feel an ownership of the book and feel like they're a part of putting together this beautiful product.
Yeah, and that's how I felt on my first Kickstarter project that I helped fund. It was great, and I do want to mention to listeners that you can get my book at Hearthside in Juneau, and they may also be at Costco.
Oh, hey, all right, the big time. So Hearthside for sure, and you may be able to find it at Costco as well. Once again, it's called Snap Decisions, My 30 Years as an Alaska News Photographer. Jim Lavrakis, longtime Anchorage Daily News and also freelancer. Thanks so much, Jim. We really appreciate you letting us give you a ring there at the end of the road.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Andy.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Paul Simon singing about Kodachrome, and Jim Lavrakis, a great book there, Snap Decisions. Recommended highly. It's been really wonderful to have it in the office and take a look at it. We're going to be talking to folks about the Community Night of Hope and Healing coming up tonight at 6, and also the Eagle Crest Report. That's coming up in just a minute here, right after Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 19th of December, 2012. It was on this day, 1843, Charles Dickens' story, A Christmas Carol, was published. He had written the book in 6 weeks. He needed the money. He had a large mortgage payment. His parents and siblings were begging for money. His wife was expecting their fifth child. And the sales of his most recent novel, Martin Chuzzlewit, were disappointing. So he rushed through A Christmas Carol in time to get it printed up for the holiday season. He decided to publish it himself, and he designed the book to have a gold-stamped cover, woodcuts, four hand-colored etchings, a fancy binding, gilt-edged pages, title pages in red and green, hand-colored green endpapers. He decided the green wasn't bright enough, so he did the endpapers in red and blue instead. It went on sale on December the 19th. It cost 5 shillings. It was a big bestseller. First edition, 6,000 copies, sold out by Christmas Eve. But he had priced the book too low for such a handsome edition, and so he made much less from that first run than he expected to, just about £200. He was hoping for 1,000. It's the birthday of Edith Piaf, born in Paris, 1915. Her mother was a cafe singer. Her father was a street performer, acrobat, contortionist. As a girl, she was sent to her grandmother's brothel, where she was raised by prostitutes. She became an international singing star with songs like La Vie en Rose and Non, je ne regrette rien. Died at the age of 47. 40,000 mourners joined her funeral procession in Paris. It's the birthday of Maria Sandford, born in Saybrook, Connecticut, 1836. She became one of the first female college professors in the country. She was the first woman to deliver a commencement speech at a university. She taught at the University of Minnesota, where on her 80th birthday, someone gave a speech that described her as vehement and gusty, leonine, hale, and lusty. And it was on this day in 1776 that Thomas Paine's The American Crisis was published in pamphlet form in Philadelphia. He wrote it to try to raise morale on the colonial side. His pamphlet that begins, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman." Here's a poem for today by Donald Hall entitled Apples, Peaches, based on an old jump rope rhyme, "Apples, peaches, pumpkin pie, how many years until I die?" "Hostess Twinkies, Wonder Bread, how many springs until I'm dead? Plague and pestilence, rot and mold, how many months before I'm cold? Unicorn, sphinx, phoenix, griffin, how many hours before I stiffen? Helga, Olga, Astrid, Ingrid, how many days until I'm rigid? The New York Times, Le Monde, Der Sturm, how many breaths before the worm?" Donald Hall's poem Apples, Peaches, from The Back Chamber, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, edited by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac. We're back here in Juneau on Juneau afternoon, where the forecast for tonight is calling for mostly cloudy skies, locally windy. Wind is the big featured thing in the forecast right now, with gusts around 45 miles an hour predicted tonight, and some areas of snow, isolated snow showers late. Lows from 15 degrees all the way down to 4 degrees in wind-sheltered areas. So it's going to get cold right now, and we're heading into the winter months, and we've had kind of a rough winter. It's been kind of a tough couple of months, and with me right now are Lindsay Cotto and Dove Gartenberg, both of NAMI, and thanks both of you for coming in. And Lindsay, you've helped to organize a really, I think, something that's maybe really needed here in the community, a community night of hope and healing, which is going to happen tonight at the Northern Lights Church. Tell me a little bit about the background about why you thought this would be a good thing for Juneau to have.
Well, I grew up here in the Juneau community, and within the last few months especially, it's been a really hard time for all of us. We've lost a lot of our community members, and it's really taking a toll on us here. And so we had gotten together, the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition, along with NAMI, and we decided that we should really put something on for the community to kind of bring them together in this time. And also in light of the Connecticut shootings, we've decided that this is something that Juneau needs, and this is something that Juneau needs now.
It's something that just feels like there's a common grief happening among so many people, all of us, who've either watched the news or also because, especially here in Juneau, the tragedies that have happened to young people. It's so tough when these young guys who are in the prime of their life have had these accidents, a boating accident and a household accident that really, you know, rob them of a full life. And it's something that friends can talk about, but I think as a community, it's really important that we come together as well.
Well, we wanted to create a context for people to be together and to comfort each other and to be comforted by leaders in the community. I think what's beautiful about it is that there'll be clergy and representatives from the different faith communities presenting prayers. So it's a real rare opportunity for people of all faiths and orientations to be together under one roof.
Tell me a little bit about how the evening is going to go. What do you have sort of planned?
Oh, well, I have a program in front of me that I finalized today. And so actually, I want to thank Commercial Signs and Printing. They actually donated the printing for the program for tonight. I'm going to start off by welcoming everybody and also thanking Pastor Phil Campbell for housing the event and really kind of let him take it from there. But on the roster for people that are going to be either speaking or saying a short prayer of hope and healing, Pastor Phil Campbell, Charles Rohrbacher from the Catholic community. Dove isn't going to be able to make it, but Jan Levy will be representing the Jewish community here in town. Representative Kathy Mignot was wonderful enough. She's going to talk for a little bit about community support and coming together after tragedy. Sam Jordan, a member of the Baha'i community, will be saying a prayer. And I've got Cindy Roberts from the Douglas Community United Methodist Church. And then to top it off, I've got Elder John Martin, who's a part of our regional suicide prevention task force, but he'll be doing a prayer and clinket for us. And then we're going to welcome everybody to do a candle lighting ceremony on your own time, just to light a candle for someone that you've lost. And I cut down a tree this morning for people to come and tie ribbons on the tree of hope that they've written on. So I've just put that in the church today.
Oh, nice. Okay. And John Martin, great basketball player, too. Just throw that out there. Okay, he's got a killer jump shot. Dove, tell me a little bit more about, you were talking about the context of the, putting this in context for the community. Tell me a little bit more about NAMI's role when these sort of things are happening, how you feel that NAMI fits into to assisting the community to cope.
Well, NAMI's outreach is to people who suffer from mental illness and families that have loved ones who are suffering from mental illness. As you can imagine, this time of year is a very, very hard time for many people. There's seasonal affect disorder, depression, the darkness, the cold,
and even
tends to isolate us.
Even just the holiday season for folks who don't feel connected, it can feel that much more disconnected.
That intensifies the feelings of isolation or loneliness. So we are very sensitive to that, and I think that was a part of the impetus for this program and why we really supported Lindsay's initiatives on this. And we also see just generally in our programming, and I understand anecdotally from previous directors of NAMI, that we tend to get more people involved at this time of year. So 1 in 4 people in our country suffer from mental illness either at some point in their life or as a chronic condition. And so this is a reality, and we certainly know we can see in the news the most extreme cases where it can affect violence. Most people are not violent, but they are isolated, and we're concerned about being able to create a network of support.
And I think that whole thing, one in four people being affected, but so many of those people have feelings of wanting to keep it secret or keep it
right.
not something that's talked about in the open, or you don't talk about those kinds of problems. And it seems like part of the role of your organization is to get it out there that this is a common problem. This
it's
is
an
a
illness,
common issue.
Like other illnesses. You talk about cancer or heart conditions. These are very common, and people, when we can remove the stigma, it helps us get to proper treatment and support. So whether we're helping the person who's suffering or and very often helping the families coping with the realities of this, it makes a big impact, and we can connect and provide context for people to get support.
Are there resources out there for folks as they are dealing with this, other outreach that they can
yes.
they can access?
So in the program, I've included a list of Juno mental health resources. On that list is JAMI, the Juno Alliance for Mental Illness, or Mental Health Incorporated, NAMI, of course. Juno Youth Services does a lot for ages 3 to 21. We've got the Juno School District has great psychologists and counseling staff for students. SEARCH is another one. The Tribal Family and Youth Services, Catholic Community Services, and UAS has a great counseling service as well. And so I've listed their websites, email addresses, and their phone numbers in this program for people to take home.
And for folks who are really either friends of theirs or maybe they themselves are really having dark thoughts, there's a suicide prevention line that's always available for folks as well.
Yes, there is a Caroline line, and I don't have the number with me on hand, but there is a Caroline. If you go to JunoSuicidePrevention.org, we have all of that information on there for you.
Great, yeah, and there's a national suicide prevention line that's always accessible. There's also the Alaska Caroline,
yes.
which also provides these kind of services and referral services and gets people kind of the information they need.
I'd like to add that NAMI is a national organization, National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a fantastic website, NAMI.org, that has tremendous resources for people in learning about various types of diagnoses, treatment, research, advocacy, and it's just a great resource for people. You can find also listservs of people if you're suffering from a particular condition, to find other people around the country that are dealing with it and creating connections that way as well. So I can't recommend that site enough for people.
I would just add, having kind of worked with the group a little bit, that just, you know, if you have friends that are showing some signs of stress, if they're asking about pills or firearms, if they're feel like they're isolated, if their job performance or school performance has all of a sudden taken a big dive, you know, those are all potential signs that they're really in a little bit of trouble potentially, or they're having thoughts that might not be healthy. And it's totally great to go to those kind of resources. NAMI.org is a great resource that you can go on there, see what kind of signs are there, and see how you might be able to help a friend in need or help yourself if you're feeling that way as well.
Definitely. Right. And Juno does a really great job, and we're working on it still. Really education to teachers, education to students in school to know what to look for, signs of, you know, depression and stuff like that, and where to report it and what to do if you really are concerned about someone.
And a great thing to go to tonight is the Community Night of Hope and Healing. One more time, just give us a little bit of a rundown of how people can get involved with that.
Okay, the Community Night of Hope and Healing, it's tonight at Northern Light United Church. It'll be held from 6 to 8 p.m., and we really hope to see everybody there.
Well, Lindsay and Dove, thanks so much for coming in, and thanks so much for organizing this as well. I think this is a great opportunity for people to get some of this, some of this out in the open, talk about it, talk about shared feelings, and help cope with what's going on.
Definitely.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Support comes from the Prospector Hotel, downtown near the Convention Center, featuring T.K. McGuire's Restaurant and Lounge with a Friday lunch buffet. More information at prospectorhotel.com.
And coming up next, we've got the Eagle Crest Report. Matt and Jacob with me. How you guys doing?
We're good. A little chilly.
How you feeling today?
Good. Rested. Uh-huh.
Yeah? Yeah? Feeling good? Had the Eagle Crest employee party last night?
We did.
It was your Friday last night, right?
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So the last one we're going to have for a while here, actually.
Yeah. So tell me about what's happening up on the mountains. It's super windy outside right now. So what kind of concerns do you have in maintaining the mountain when you get these conditions that's forecast right now for these high winds?
Yeah, well, first, the winds that we see on Douglas, for instance, or even downtown Juneau, we don't generally get them that badly up at the mountain. I mean, I looked at today before I walked in the door, and right now it's peaking at the mountain at 29, averaging about 23, 24. So that's nothing compared to the 50, 60 we might see tonight on Douglas. So,
yeah, it's sort of like a tip for the top of the mountain, almost like a typical,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
it can be blowing 20 miles an hour,
yeah,
on
so
any day.
I definitely recommend people, you know, there's a great link from our snow report page to the Juneau Airport Wind Weather System, JAWS for short, that really lists the exact wind speed and temperature at the top of the mountain. It's always a good one to check to see what it's doing because, you know, as you said, a 24, 25 knot wind is not that bad. It's a little bad, but it really only hits you when you get to the top. We're pretty well protected, which is great.
All right, cool. And now what's happened to the snow conditions? The last couple times we've talked, it was, it's this light stuff. Now we've had a lot more snow kind of pack in, and what's going on?
Yeah, we picked up, I guess it's a week and a half ago now, we picked up well over a foot plus of that heavy wet cent that we finally needed. So we got Ptarmigan open last weekend and everything but the West Bowl. And then we spent Monday going out there and doing some avalanche mitigation work and putting up rope lines. So coming into Thursday, we've got approximately 72 inches at the top stake and 30 plus at the bottom. And we should have 100% of the mountain open, including the West Bowl and the ridge and all that fun stuff. So,
all
yeah.
Right. we got our mountain back.
Definitely.
All right.
And
well,
it's started wet, but with this cold weather, it should be drying out. So there should be some great turns to be had just about everywhere.
Very cool. Well, it's the holidays coming up. So are there special, what are the kind of the hours and what should people know about what's happening during the holidays here?
Well, the big thing is to know that we're going to be open daily starting tomorrow until January 7th, with the exception, of course, of Christmas Day. And then on Christmas Eve, actually, we're going to have a little celebration up at Eagle Crest, if you haven't been there before. So, of course, that's December 24th. We'll have torchlight parades, music, and Santa Claus will actually be visiting at 6 p.m.
It's a Juneau tradition, yeah. Santa Claus at Eagle Crest, absolutely. He's pretty adept on those skis, that Santa Claus.
He is. Yeah. He absolutely is. So, you know, he's pretty busy this time of year, but every year he makes sure to visit Eagle Crest because he knows it's a pretty special place. Kids help him out with a little torchlight parade up the mountain. Lands up there.
Yeah, well, his team of merry helpers, he comes down in a nice ski patrol sled,
well,
nice
you
and
know,
safely.
You know Dasher and Prancer and Donner.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, Dick.
Yeah.
And they stop at the meadow themselves, and they enjoy the blueberries that help fuel them to supply toys
they clear
and
the
presents
brush
to
for us. They help clear
exactly.
that brush out. Yes,
exactly.
Those reindeer are very helpful.
Yeah, and we always say, you know, you can help out the elves, especially parents, by going online, and there's a form they can fill out there and just kind of let them know that you'll be coming up, and it helps them out and makes for a great evening. So definitely check that out on SkiJuneau.com.
So nod and a wink to the parents out there, yes. Go to Eagle Crest.
Yeah.
Go to SkiJuneau.com.
Yes,
check
exactly.
Check that out. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so that's a great event. And then the bus will be running starting Saturday daily as well, the snow bus. So if you want to find a way to get up there and don't want to drive, it's a great way to come up. They stop at all around Juneau, out in the valley. I'll start out in Auk Bay and come all the way through downtown Douglas and head up to the mountain.
Cool. So that's Christmas Eve. What's as we head into the new year? What's going on? Anything cool happening?
Well, we this weekend we start up our learn to skate Nordic lessons. We've got some great new Nordic rental gear to get out there. So anybody wants to get into that, the Nordic loop will be fully groomed as well. The lower loop for the entire holiday break, both for classic and skate. So we're looking forward to that. We've also got all the holiday camps starting up for kids. That starts the day after Christmas. So those camps are great. There's two of them, the first week and then again the second week, are a great way for kids to get out there with a bunch of other kids and some great instructors and have a great time. So
filling up fast.
Yes, they're filling up fast for sure. So give a call to 790-2000 extension 211 to get your spot in there, because I'd imagine by the end of this weekend it'll be booked full.
790-2000 extension 211.
Exactly.
Is that number? Okay. So that's call that quick, because as you say, they're filling up.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to cover for the holiday season? What's happening at Eagle Crest? Other cool stuff?
Well, check out the Facebook page for sure. We've been posting some pretty cool photos that Chris Miller, one of our local photographers, has been submitting. And also Patagonia, the clothing company, has recently put out a really cool video recorded here in Juneau last year. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's worth your time. If you're having a bad day, save it till that moment when you really need it. Check out that video on the Eagle Crest
Well, give
Facebook
me a preview.
Page.
What is it? Is it showing locals out there using the gear? Is that the
they
idea?
Came up and they toured around with Alaska Powder Descents and some other people in town. Came up to Eagle Crest for a couple days. So there's some great shots of the Eagle Crest side country in that area, both in and outside the lines, and as well as all the other mountains around here, Mount McGinnis, all those other places that a lot of the skiers and riders know quite well. But they had an amazing stretch of weather when they were here. There's some amazing shots, and you can just tell how special Eagle Crest and Juneau is for the ski and ride community here, as well as around the world. It's just a premier place to be.
All right, very cool. And that's on the skijuneau.com as well, the
Patagonia. You'll find it there.
Very cool. Okay, so check out skijuneau.com also for all the updated weather reports, all that stuff before you head up to the mountain. It's always a great place to check it out, or as you're planning your next day's events. And as you say, as you're planning the events coming up for Christmas Eve, if you're a parent, check out
skijuneau.com. You know it.
And, don't let the kids see you, but do that, and you'll be glad you did. All right. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you.
I know you guys got a big couple of weeks ahead of you, so don't get, pace yourselves.
Oh, yeah. We're ready for it. We are rested up the past couple days, and we're welcoming everybody up. We can't wait for it.
All right. Awesome. That's the Eagle Crest Ski Report. Thanks, you guys, again.
Thank you.
That's a Juneau afternoon for today. Once again, the wind down here at sea level anyway, and downtown in Douglas is the big news for the weather. 50-mile-an-hour winds forecast for the rest of today, and then 45-mile-an-hour wind gusts tonight with some isolated snow showers also happening late. Mostly cloudy skies for tomorrow. Locally windy again with gusts around 45 miles an hour downtown and in Douglas. And partly cloudy skies, locally windy for tomorrow night. Lows right around 10 degrees, and 40-mile-an-hour wind gusts again for Thursday night as well, downtown Juneau and Douglas. Thanks for listening to Juneau Afternoon today. Appreciate you tuning in, and we'll get back to more news from NPR coming up in just a minute.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780. Support is provided by USPS Contract Station, offering postal services downtown on the corner of Franklin and Front Street, with extended hours from December 10th to the 22nd, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5:30, and 9 to 3 on Saturday.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Obama said today he has appointed a team led by Vice President Joe Biden to come up with what he